on Business and Labor.
Yes, beautiful.
And I'm going to go a little out of order here. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 7048.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we first heard Senate Bill 704A on April the 11th. What the measure does, it exempts persons that are performing work for purposes of agricultural drainage, trenching, irrigation, or fencing, and performing work on forest lands for which a notice of operation has been filed from the required licensure as a construction contractor. There's an emergency clause effect upon passage. You have in front of you, members, a -A7 amendment, which clarifies the exemption of agricultural fencing to just fences that are built for the purposes of controlling livestock. With the amendment, it still maintains the no revenue minimum fiscal impact on the measure.
Does Mr. Beyer want to come and talk about the amendment, or have we already discussed it?
He's fine. Okay. We have not discussed it, Mr. Chair. It was an issue that came up during the public hearing, and so there was question. I was directed by legislative counsel and also to work with Mr. Beyer on the amendment language. So there was the overall topic was discussed during the public hearing.
We haven't just come up.
Yeah, Raj, would you come up and briefly just share the gist of this amendment? I think everyone understands the bill and the purpose and what we're trying to do here, but Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer here representing the egg tile drainage people and the small woodland owners on this bill. The amendment you have in front of you, the A7 amendment, would just technically clarify what the fencing exemption would be. As we testified in the original hearing, with this amendment in the bill, person building fences for the control of livestock would be exempt from construction contractor licensure, but a person building a fence around a rancher's yard for decorative purposes would not be exempt. So that it is very specific, only in the agricultural system would it be exempt from licensure.
Thank you.
Does it change anything in terms of people supporting or opposing the bill?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, it does not that I'm aware of. Representative Vance was the sponsor of the part of the fencing. He shared this amendment with him and his staff as soon as we got it, and they said it looked fine to them. It would take care of their problem. All my clients are very supportive of the bill with this amendment.
Any further questions, Mr. Clark? The only concern I have, Raj, is that there's people in this building that want to build a big, giant fence and fence off all of rural Oregon and not let anyone in anymore.
Mr. Chair, I don't know that
this doesn't grab
keeping people out would be considered livestock. So those people, if they build a fence like that, would be considered licensed.
Representative.
I would assume that the people that are doing this work, even though they don't have a contractor's license, have certain liability insurance and something, so if they do make a mistake on a job, that the consumer would have recourse.
Mr. Chair, Representative Doherty, in the instance of, there's kind of three different elements, so we'll walk through those. In the instance of the egg tiling, egg drainage, yes, those people are all carry insurance and they work on for farmers. As you heard in the first hearing, they are multi-generational. I think there are six or seven in the state of Oregon that do that kind of work. They're all insured. They've never had to be licensed before. In the instance of livestock fencing, what brought this forward was an unemployed person who'd been working for a rancher in Eastern Oregon someplace, rebuilding livestock fencing. I don't know the specifics in that case, if that person would be insured or not, but I think if a person, cowhand goes to a neighbor rancher and says, I need the job, can I build your fences? And the rancher says, well, I'm not going to make you my employee, but you can do it for so much a mile or something. I don't know that person would carry insurance, but I think it's kind of a risk both sides would be assuming.
But the person that hires them knows that. So
yeah, obviously. And in the case of logging, all loggers would be insured. All loggers. I don't know of any time a logger isn't required to carry liability insurance.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
Any further questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Colleagues,
we're
in work session.
Oh, okay.
I'm prepared to move this forward if the rest of you feel comfortable with it.
Okay.
I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move the -A7 amendments into Senate Bill 704.
Chair Cameron moves -A7 and Senate Bill 704. Is there any discussion on the amendment on the motion? Forgive me. Any objection? And let the record show that Representative Hoyle is excused. Representative?
Okay. Teresa, this is ready to go to the floor.
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I move Senate Bill 704 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Kenner moves Senate Bill 704 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, so moved. Would someone like to volunteer to carry this bill? Pardon me?
Do you want Representative Bence
to carry it? Oh, yeah, Representative Bence, yes, of course. All right, very good. Close work session on Senate Bill 704A and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 485A.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 485A allows a real estate agency to issue a cease and desist order subject to the Administrative Procedures Act and maintain action for an injunction against a person who engages or is about to engage in professional real estate activity without a license. There's an emergency clause effect upon passage. The measure was voted out unanimously at the Senate Business, Transportation, and Economic Development Committee and off the Senate floor with a 28-1 vote.
Thank you. I'm going to call Leslie Derman from Senator Bonamici's office and Mr. Dubanovich. An AG's office, please. Attorney General's office. Good morning. Leslie, if you want to kick us off here, feel free to do so.
Thank you. Co-Chair Schauffler, Co-Chair Kenemer, my name is Leslie Derman. I'm here on behalf of Senator Bonamici to testify in support of Senate Bill 485. Thank you for hearing this bill. Senator Bonamici put this bill in on behalf of her constituents, Lynn and John Putnam. This bill will allow the Oregon Real Estate Agency to issue cease and desist orders against people operating without a real estate license. Hopefully, once this bill passes, other people won't have to go through what the Putnams went through. The Putnams live in Portland, but own and rent a house in Bend, and they hope to retire there. Because they live in Portland, they hired a property management company. One day last spring, the Bend police contacted the Putnams to tell them that the company was closed. The Putnams learned that the owner had embezzled funds, including more than $3,400 of the Putnams' money. The Putnams turned out to be among about 70 other Oregonians who lost approximately $200,000 in the operation that occurred in Bend. The Putnams learned that for at least part of the time in question, the owner of the operation was operating without anyone on staff who was licensed in Oregon to manage property. The Oregon Real Estate Agency imposed a fine on the owner and it suspended the license of one of the employees, but the agency didn't have the authority to shut down the operation. Senate Bill 485 will remedy that by allowing the real estate agency to seek a cease and desist order and get an injunction against a person who is conducting or is about to conduct real estate activity without a license. Co-Chair Schauffler, Co-Chair Kenemer, members of the committee, Senator Bonamici and I strongly urge you to support this bill and send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And with that, I turn it over to the expert.
Go ahead, sir.
Co-Chair Schauffler, Co-Chair Kenemer, my name is Keith Dubanovich. I'm Chief of Staff to Attorney General Kroger. The issue before you is whether the real estate agency should have the same kind of power and authority that most other state agencies do, and that is to issue a cease and desist order when someone is performing an action as a real estate agent or other real estate activities without a license. By way of background, the Board of Accountancy, the Tax Practitioners Board, DCBS, DHS, virtually every other state board and commission has the ability to issue a cease and desist order. The real estate agency does not, purely for lack of oversight. And as my colleague to the left of me explained, there are circumstances where the real estate agency needs to be able to step in on an immediate basis to save people's money. And in this circumstance, that money disappeared before the agency was able to really do anything. Senate Bill 485 was amended on the Senate side to include a specific provision that says that any request for a cease and desist order has to be pursuant to the Administrative Procedures Act. There was an issue that rose on the Senate side about what would the process be, and to make sure it's consistent with all of the other steps that are taken by the real estate agency and other boards and commissions, the bill was amended to specifically state that it is subject to ORS Chapter 183, which is the Administrative Procedures Act. So with that, we recommend the committee to move this bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Any questions of these good people? I think it's pretty straightforward what we're doing here. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I'm going to call up Sean Gillian's. What is that? Gene Bentley and Lori Skittleman. I must go. Whoever wants to go first, good morning.
Morning. For the record, my name is Gene Bentley. I'm the Real Estate Commissioner of the State of Oregon, and I'm here to speak in favor of this particular bill. As Senator Bonamici's request, the agency worked with the senator to develop a legislative concept that would provide the agency with the authority to issue cease and desist orders and to enjoin unlicensed individuals as additional enforcement tool. Senate Bill 485 will provide the agency with the authority to issue cease and desist orders to enjoin unlicensed individuals who engage in professional real estate activities which require a real estate broker, principal broker, or property manager license. As a background, the agency has the cease and desist authority against unlicensed escrow agents, and we license people who do professional real estate activities, either broker, principal broker, or property manager, and in addition to that, we also license escrow entities. The statutory procedures in the agency are required to follow when issuing a cease and desist order are the same procedures under the Oregon Administrative Procedures Act, ORS, Chapter 183. The agency currently follows those when issuing any administrative order. Under Chapter 183, individuals named in a cease and desist order, a respondent, will be provided with a notice and an opportunity for hearing. If the respondent requests a hearing will be held before an administrative law judge from the Office of Administrative Hearings. The respondent may be requested or may request an attorney if they so desire. The administrative law judge would issue the final order. If the judgment is found in favor of the agency against the respondent could appeal the case to the Court of Appeals. Many state regulatory agencies have this authority, and I think you've heard that from the AG earlier. If the individual violates a cease and desist order from engaging in unlicensed activity, Senate Bill 485A provides the agency with the ability to ask the court to enforce the order. In addition, the cease and desist provision of Senate Bill 485A also provides the Attorney General or a prosecuting attorney of any county or the agency in its own name to file an injunction against an unlicensed individual. By way of an example, about a year ago, the agency issued an administrative order against an unlicensed individual engaged in property management and imposed a civil penalty. As part of a routine follow-up, the agency found that the individual was still engaged in unlicensed property management. The agency issued a second administrative order and a fine. In this case, if the agency had had the ability to issue a cease and desist order, later found that the individual was still engaged in unlicensed property management, the agency would have had the ability to ask the court to enforce the cease and desist order as a judgment or to enjoin the activity. In this particular case, the loss was more than $235,000 to property owners because of the engaging in unlicensed property management activities. Senate Bill 485A will provide the agency with the ability to use an additional tool to prevent people from doing unlicensed professional real estate activity. Thank you.
Go ahead. Therefore, my hand signals.
Thank you, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, Sean Jillians representing the Oregon Association of Realtors in support of Senate Bill 485A. I think when this issue was brought to our attention in the interim by Senator Bonamici and the commissioner, we were actually surprised that the agency didn't already have this authority. We take very seriously the need for individuals to be licensed in this state when they are conducting professional real estate activity, and we think this is a common sense bill that will help the agency have additional tools to stop individuals who are engaged in professional real estate activity without a license. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions on this specific bill. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Chair Schaffler, Chair Kenemer, for the record, my name is Laurie Skillman. I'm a manager with the Oregon Real Estate Agency. I'm here only for technical questions that the committee may have. Thank you.
We're glad you're here for that, believe me. All right. Any questions of these good people?
My understanding is we're going to have a potential amendment from Guerrilla Capital, and there's been an issue. You want to discuss that?
We received a letter that was sent to Senator Bonamici's office from Guerrilla Capital. Guerrilla Capital, as a point of information, is an entity for which we have a issue, and we've found and we've issued an order against them for doing unlicensed activity. What they're suggesting really is something that is entirely different than the cease and desist order that is before you right now. And it really is who should be or who should not be required to have a license. And that's a separate issue. And I think that there are a number of stakeholders that need to be involved in that. There was some modification of who was required to have a license that was brought forth by the Oregon State Bar in the last session. And there were a number of stakeholders that were involved in that discussion, and that was successfully brought forward. I think in this particular case, that if Guerrilla Capital wishes, they can certainly ask us to convene a group of stakeholders to deal with this issue. But there are a number of entities that have a stake in this particular issue as to who is exempt from licensing. And in their particular case, they have had a order against them. They have the ability to take that through the process of the Administrative Procedures Act and file a objection to that if they so elect. And we're waiting to see that we're in the time frame where that might possibly happen.
Mr. Shelley, and the realtors have a position about this?
Yeah, thank you, co-chairs and members. I was approached by the representatives from Guerrilla Capital in the last couple days to talk about potential amendments. Unfortunately, we do not support their broadening of the exceptions for the requirement to have a real estate license. I think the commissioner laid out the process that we had in 2009 when a bill came forward from the real estate and land use section of the bar dealing specifically with LLCs and whether or not they should be exempt. I think, Representative Matthews, you might even remember this conversation, but it would, the conversation centered around, under current law, an individual can sell their own property without needing a real estate license. And under law, typically a corporation or LLC is treated as an individual for particular purposes, and so the real estate and land use section wanted LLCs to be able to sell their own property that they owned without having to obtain a real estate license, just like an individual would. At that point in time, the bill was drafted very broadly, and we worked on amendments to narrow the scope to talk about sole or managing members of the LLC to make it more analogous to the individual selling property. It was never the intention that that would create a loophole that businesses would not have to have their employees licensed under the state licensing laws for conducting professional real estate activity. And so I think broadening that exception, which our members were very leery of, I have to be honest with you, Co-Chair Kenemer, our members were very leery to even put that LLC exception in there, would cause great concern for the Oregon Association of Realtors.
Anything else?
Not at this point.
Well, but I'm sure there's perfectly honest people out there that would act and do business in good faith. And they're not the ones we're talking about. There's always some miserable bustard out there trying to cheat somebody, and that's why we have licensure in this state, and people have to comply with it. It's unfortunate, but it's just a fact of life. But as far as the discussion going forward, I think this committee would be very interested in having someone up here involved in such a work group so that going forward we have someone up here that could speak intelligently to us on what the I'm involved in enough work groups. I'm trying to weasel out of being in another one. but you see where I'm going. If we're going to have something, I would like someone from this committee to be involved in that. if you would, please. Any further questions?
Wait a minute.
Don't we have a realtor on this committee? I think we have a likely victim.
Any further questions of these good
people? Thanks, Mike.
My pleasure. Hey, man, I wasn't even looking at you.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have a shop attorney, too. There are a lot of potential.
That's right.
Oh, and a contractor. He had another one.
Let's get the person that lives farthest away from Salem to be on here.
That'd be me.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
I would also like to see this go forward with which we have discussed in the past, the commissioner and I, where you have an individual that, example, we know of an individual that I believe has 19 indictments against them, and we cannot pull their license.
Jeez.
Yet that individual, it may take 2 or 3 or 4 years for that individual to go through the process, and yet we've got the wolf loose in the sheep, and there's nothing we can do about it, and I'd like to see us craft something where we can.
This cease and desist order would not affect that?
No. Yep. Man, that's amazing. Okay, any further questions of these good people? All right, thanks a lot. Now we're going to listen to some folks that are, I'm sure, John Helmick, Jared Kahn, and Courtney Godner. Okay, good. Yeah, yes, please. And make sure, I just want to qualify what I just said. There are legitimate businesses out there doing legitimate business, operating good faith, that may or may not be under licensure. I did not mean to imply anyone in this room is not doing business in good faith. Just a question of who is exempt and who isn't. And today we're talking about the cease and desist. So please feel welcome. Whoever wants to go first. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Co-chairs Kenemer and Scheffler and members of the committee, my name is John Helmick. Thank you for having me here today to testify. Grill Capital is a small business. It's one of the fastest-growing businesses in Oregon. Inc. Magazine and Portland Business Journal has ranked us as the third fastest-growing company in Oregon. 4 years ago, we had 6 employees. Today, we have 42 employees. As a small business, we're not normally here in Salem. Up until Monday this week, I did not have a lobbyist. We don't follow the statutes, but we have to comply with all the statutes. As a small business, we have many threats. Every day we have a threat of the economy, of being able to obtain enough credit to conduct our business. We have threats of interest. What I never thought we'd have is that our own government would be a threat to our livelihood, that our jobs would be at risk due to government action. Less than a month ago, an order came down from the real estate agency that Grill Capital, one of our officers, was in violation of ORS 696-020, practicing professional real estate activity without a license, and we were fined $600. If this law passes, the real estate agency can issue a cease and desist order against Grill Capital that would effectively put us out of business. Let's talk about what was that action that violated the statute. One of our officers went to the courthouse in Josephine County for a foreclosure auction. The lender, the trustee, opened the bidding with the lender, Bank of America, bidding $127,600. The auctioneer then said, are there any other bids? Grill Capital's officer, Scott Wise, said yes. Grill Capital bids $127,601. Going once, going twice, sold. That is the violation. That cost us $600 fine, and now, if this bill passes, allows the real estate agency to put a cease and desist order on us that would put us out of business. Why was that action of buying real estate at a foreclosure auction a violation of the real estate? We don't think it is, frankly, and we do expect to appeal this order to the Oregon Appellate Court. However, it takes 11 to 14 months to get a decision from the Oregon Appellate Court. In the meantime, if this law passes, the real estate agency can put us out of business. There are exemptions from professional real estate activity. And by the way, as an aside, I like to say that Grill Capital has a construction license. We have about 20% of our employees are realtors. When we sell homes, we pay real estate commissions. Last year, we paid $700,000 in real estate commissions. This year, we are on budget to end up paying over $1 million in real estate commissions. I mean, the realtors should be on our side. Anyway, the issue is that there are exemptions from registration, exemptions from license. One of the exemptions is an officer or director of a corporation is exempt. Scott Wise is an officer of Guerrilla Capital. Why is he not exempt? The reason is because we titled the property in Guerrilla Capital, Josephine County, number 2, LLC, a wholly owned subsidiary of Guerrilla Capital. Under the LLC rule, you have to be a sole member or managing member. In other words, you have to be an owner. Scott is not an owner. He's an officer of the corporation. However, under the real estate statute, real estate is defined as any interest in real estate, whether corporal, incorporal, freehold, or non-freehold interest. Any interest in real estate. And our argument to the real estate agency was, real estate that is titled in the name of a wholly owned subsidiary of a corporation is real estate of the corporation. Real Capital, if it leases the property, and sometimes we end up leasing the property, all the rents go to Real Capital, Inc. When we sell the property, the profits go to Real Capital, Inc. Real Capital clearly has corporal and incorporal interest in this real estate. We certainly have a freehold interest in the real estate. The real estate agency thought deeply about that and issued an opinion that we violated the law. Frankly, I don't think the real estate agency is looking to interpret the exemptions in any sort of common sense or expansive way. Today, I'm not asking you to broaden the exemptions. I'm asking you to clarify the exemptions. So the real estate, because the real estate agency needs some black and white clarification. I think the law is clear. I think the Oregon Appellate Court will agree with us. But I would like this legislative session to tell the real estate agency that when you said in 2009, by the way, this law went into effect January 1st, 2010, we were the first entity that was fined under this law that went into effect January 1st, 2010. I received a phone call from the real estate agency on January 5th, 2010. I would like you to amend this the statute simply to clarify it, which is this. An officer and director of a corporation is exempt when dealing with property, real estate of the corporation. All I would like you to add is real estate of the corporation includes real estate that is titled or owned in the name of a wholly owned subsidiary of a corporation. I think it's common sense. I don't think it should have to be included in the statute. I think it's common sense should be able to understand that. But the real estate agency refuses to understand that. I'm available for any questions you may have.
Go ahead, sir.
Morning, Representative Scheffler, Representative Kenemar, and the other members of the committee. My name is Jared Kahn. I'm an attorney with Reeves, Kahn, Hennessy, and Elkins. Our law firm represents and lobbies on behalf of a group called Northwest Real Estate Investment Association, Investors Association. We're here today, as we were before the Senate committee, to express some deep concerns about this bill. The bill, which was then amended to seemingly address some of our concerns that there would be a notice and opportunity for a hearing, they included the language that this bill would now be subject to the APA. However, the bill is still not clear that the cease and desist order can issue before a hearing or not. And I understand Mr. Bentley testified saying that there would be an order issued, a notice issued, and an administrative law judge would then make a determination, and that this is in line with how other statutes read. However, other statutes that apply to other agencies actually spell that out in the statute, that there is a 30-day period for the accused or the alleged to actually respond to a notice of violation, otherwise then a cease and desist order would issue. Here, the language here does not actually specifically mention that, and that is still a concern for our association because there there are due process violations that could occur here if a cease and desist order is issued without a hearing. And the way the statute's written, although Mr. Bentley explained that there would be a notice of an opportunity, it's just that the agency may, after a reason to believe, issue a cease and desist order by simply recording it with the county recorder. It does say subject to the APA. Now, our law firm has represented numerous individuals who have had notice of violations issued against them, and in many of those cases, after months and months and even after a year, a determination is made by an ALJ that there wasn't a violation. However, under this guise of the language now, that company would have had a cease and desist order issued at the very beginning by the agency, put them out of business until an ALJ under the APA, which takes months and months to finally get a decision out after discovery and hearings, to finally have determined that our clients were not in violation. And then under this statute, they would have been out of business that entire time, and the opportunity to have a hearing would have been after the fact, after a cease and desist order would have issued. One of the things that we would just like to also clarify under this bill is that if, even though it says it's maybe subject to Chapter 183, Section B talks about that after a cease and desist order is issued, it's basically the equivalent of a judgment. And a judgment has not been determined yet by an ALJ. If an ALJ has actually issued an order and a finding and a judgment, then that's fine. But under the statute, the cease and desist order is equivalent of a judgment, and then continuing to operate would be a contempt matter. And there has still not been, under this statute as written, a determination by an ALJ that states that there is a violation. Certainly, Section 2 talks about an injunction. An injunction is when the agency would have to come and prove that there's a substantial likelihood of success on the merits, that there is an irreparable harm, and that the person's in violation. I think that language is sufficient and encompassing what the real estate agency would like to do. What the real estate agency would like to do with Section 1 is essentially skip that step of the cease and with a cease and desist order by just issuing it, by recording it in the county recording office, rather than actually having a hearing on the merits, even if it's at the initial stages of an APA hearing. There needs to be some form of hearing that the agency has to prove a substantial likelihood of success on the merits. Here it's just the reason to believe standard. The standard is too low. It's not even a preponderance of the evidence, which is the basic minimum standard in a civil case. Even under the ALJ standards, what they have to find is a preponderance of the evidence to find that as a notice of violation. A reason to believe is just too weak of a standard for the real estate agency to basically be issuing cease and desist orders and going from an executive branch and taking on judicial powers. Again, I would say that the harm here, that if a cease and desist order is issued by the real estate agency, as the statute is written, you're going to put out people out of business. And I understand, and there was mention of, there's unscrupulous companies, and then there's people who fall within the exceptions. The clients that we've had to represent fell within the exceptions. That was even the determination by an ALJ, or our clients at Northwest REIA actually fall within most of those exceptions. They're LLCs that are selling their own property or something of that sort. Here, the real estate agency can just look up the person and say, oh, you're not licensed. I'm going to issue a cease and desist order, and then, after the fact, make a determination whether they've fallen within the exception. There's no procedure involved here that would show the real estate agency has a burden to meet that would actually determine whether or not that our client or anybody else who's actually operating with an exception has the opportunity to defend themselves before being put out of business, essentially, and having contempt proceedings against them. So what we're asking for is the language in Section 1 either needs to be amended or changed, that it specifically points out that there should be an opportunity for a hearing on the merits before a cease and desist order should issue. Being subject to the APA does not actually clarify that, because then a cease and desist order can't issue until an order has been done a year later. And that's not what the real estate agency would like to do. The real estate agency would like to do, and what they testified today and they testified previously, is issue the cease and desist order up front when they know there's a violation. Under the APA, that process takes months, if not years, even with appeal process. So that's the only thing we're asking for, is that if they would like to do a cease and desist order, which we agree with, for unscrupulous people, they should be put out of business. They should not be able to take advantage of anybody else. But for the people who are not in violation, they should not be subject to being put out of business simply because the real estate agency looks up their name and there is no license, yet they're operating within an exception. And as I mentioned earlier, we've defended people who operate within the exception. Months later, if not years later, a determination was made by an LJ that said that person's operating within the exception of the statute.
Go ahead, sir.
Thank you.
I'm going to finish up now. I have some comments.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, thank you very much for having us down here. My name is Courtney Goodman. I represent Northwest Real Estate Investors Association up in Portland. We're 300 members strong. We're a nonprofit educational group that educates our members. We're a mix of licensed brokers, property investors, rehabbers, contractors, appraisers, you name it, kind of runs the gamut. Our group is basically set up to educate our members on how to do things safely, ethically, work with sellers, work with brokers. My business is buying and selling properties, and oftentimes I employ, 15, 20, 25 people on a rehab. And my wife likes to say I improve neighborhoods one house at a time. We're only here, and we rarely come down to Salem, but when a bill like this is being proposed, we just want to tighten up the language. What our council has said is spot on. We just want due process. We don't want cease and desist orders issued without our due process, without a hearing if we're complained about. We want to do the right thing. We want to do right for Oregon, and that's why we're down here. Kind of just concurring with what Jared has shared with you. We would like that language in there, even though it said, we've heard testimony in favor of this bill. I like this bill. There's other bills that basically, I think, cover this very, very same thing with cease and desist for people acting in a professional real estate capacity without a license or going after licensees that are acting as property managers and they're not licensed as a property manager. We're all for cease and desist, but we'd like to have due process as well. I mean, the APA, that's great, but and how it's written right here, that kicks in after cease and desist. Cease and desist basically says, hey, you're shut down and you're guilty from the get-go until you prove your innocence down the line. And that's why we're here.
Thanks, guys. I really do appreciate you coming here, and I understand, at least I'm sympathetic to your frustration and what you're going through. As a licensed contractor, I have to, one, get licensed. Two, I have to conform to all the codes, and if I'm halfway building something, the inspector can come out and put a red tag on that, and I have to stop. I don't have to like it. I could even disagree with that person, but that is to protect. This is all set up, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know. It's all set up to protect the safety, health, and welfare of the people in the state because of those unscrupulous people out there. Now, here we have a problem over here, a big problem. And we have to find a solution to it. And we have to be able to go out and say to those unscrupulous people who, by the way, are competing with you and undercutting you and legitimate businesses to the detriment of this economy and this community, we have to do something about it. I really, if I owned an investment company like yours and I had this problem, I would just go get a real estate license. There's nothing stopping you. I know you can do it. There's nothing stopping you from doing that. Now, that is a government hoop you have to jump through, and I can appreciate your frustration with that, too. But rather than work in fear of being a cease and desist order, which I understand can shut you down because I've had red tags put on jobs where I had to stop, go back, redo it before I poured concrete in the right of way. That's just the way it is. I would just go get, you can avoid the cease and desist and being shut down by going getting a real estate license. Or you can risk being found inside the law that says you're not exempt from whatever the licensure would require. That's my humble opinion. And as far as going forward, I believe there will be a group of people, and I certainly want you gentlemen and whoever else you want to come and participate in this so we do get this squared away, so we're not back here in 2 years fighting over the same thing. Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Kahn, I wanted to ask you, under the proposal of the Insurance Commission, which would be due process after the cease and desist, what's the difference in the timeline versus the due process that you're asking for?
Well, I guess the timeline is a major concern.
That's why I asked the question. I think that's the fundamental issue here.
I think even the DOJ attorney here, he could speak to it as well. When you're looking at an APA process and there's a notice of violation, then there's discovery in a hearing. You're looking at several months. We had a case that took over a year.
So it is a complicated. I mean, it's not. I guess the point that I'm trying to get to is this is a little different from a red tag. Which generally is adjudicated fairly short-term, usually painfully in my limited experience, but nonetheless. And in the other case, let's suppose that you have a right to notice first. How quickly would that be typically processed?
Under the APA? Under the APA, you're going to get a notice, and if you don't respond within 30 days, an order is going to issue.
Still going to stall it 30 days.
Right. And representatives, if I may just add one more thing, and if you don't mind. The one thing here that even the consumers have is the ability to look up somebody who's licensed. In the case of the Putnams, they could have gone on the real estate licensing board and said, I'm hiring a property manager to manage my funds and my property. I should at least look them up to see if they're licensed. There should be some onus still on the consumer. The fact that that property manager was not licensed, acted unscrupulously, if the Putnams actually would have done something on their own, which is publicly available documents, just like the contractor's board, you can look up a contractor and decide, hi, I'm going to hire a licensed contractor or not, and take that risk. That onus should still be on the consumer, not simply on somebody who falls within the dozens of exceptions within the statute that the legislature has passed and has been passing for decades, adding exceptions to the rule of why there should not be licensing for certain individuals. I still feel like the consumer has a responsibility here. I'm not saying they weren't taken advantage of. I'm not saying a bad thing didn't happen. But certainly if they would have done their homework as well, I think maybe their situation might not have escalated to this to where it was and where this ended up.
Representative Esky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Helmick, you mentioned that you had about 40 employees or so, correct?
42 employees, yes,
42
sir.
42 employees. You said approximately 20% of those are licensed.
Yes, we have 20% of our, I'm a licensed attorney, we have a corporate contractor's license, and 20% of our employees are licensed realtors.
Okay.
I want to point out that the real estate agency does not license corporations, it only licenses individuals.
I understand that. Okay. Let me finish. Okay. Then you talked about commissions. Are you paying on commission on sale with all these people?
No, we're paying the buyer's agent's commissions.
Okay,
our people
what about
are our salary.
The people that work for you?
They're under salary.
Every one of them?
Yes.
So they do not sell anything and get a commission or a bonus?
They get a bonus. We share a bonus pool at the end of the year of 10% of the profits of the company.
So in actuality, it is kind of a bonus. The more you do, the more you get, which is kind of a commission.
No, it's because it doesn't matter who, I mean, it's the profit of the company regardless of who sells. There's no tie to what one person actively sold. The only commissions we pay is for the buyer's agents.
Okay.
But it's substantial. It'll be over $1 million this year.
Thank you.
I'd also like to address the red tag issue. You know, 20% of our employees are real estate licensed. I believe that we're exempt from real estate license when we buy and sell our real estate. Yes, we could have everyone take the exam and pay the fee to the real estate agency. But in some ways, that's like asking us to pay protection money to the mob when we want to do a construction project. Because, you know, there's really no reason to have to pay those fees. We're doing it simply because that's what you do.
Mr. Helmick, you know what? I don't know where this bill's going on this committee. But suggesting that we pass a bill here would be like helping the mob pinch you for money. I find it offensive. You're not doing yourself any favors with this chair right now by talking that way. Any further questions of these good people, Representative Doherty?
I'm a little confused. If you don't have licenses, it means you don't have to follow rules and you kind of make your own rules up? Is that what the issue is here?
No, the issue is whether or not there are 29 exemptions from the license requirement. ORS 696-0301 has 29 exemptions. If you're exempt, you do not need a license. One of the exemptions is any officer or director of a corporation that is dealing in the sale, acquisition, or management of real estate of the corporation is exempt. The real estate agency did not agree that our officers are exempt when we purchase real estate at a foreclosure auction.
But that's all you do is sell buy houses.
We buy them, we renovate them, and then we sell them.
But that's real estate stuff, right?
Absolutely, it's real estate stuff. And if we weren't exempt, we would need a license.
And with that, we're moving on. Thank you, gentlemen. I would like to call Judy Moore and John Sheldon, please. Whoever would like to go first? Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Judy Moore, and I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to come up and testify today. I'm a member of the Northwest REIA Association, and we are a group of real estate investors that do our very best to follow the law. I mean, honestly, that's why we're here, is because we've hired somebody to tell us when new laws are coming. And, you know, bottom line, you know, we have a meeting every month where we have an attorney come in and talk to us. And it was just last month, maybe Monday or two ago, that Lori was down with a couple other people from her agency and spoke to us, answered questions, clarify, and that's what we want to do, is follow the law. So on that note, that's why I'm here today. And I'm concerned about fundamental fairness when it comes to this, or to this Senate bill, because I know that, and you know this, so I don't really need to say it, but the 14th Amendment gives us certain rights, where we, you know, we have a right to an impartial judge, you know, a right to present evidence on our behalf, right to a notice and a hearing, you know, right to accuse or to face our accuser, right to legal representation. I mean, you know all of them, a speedy trial. And our concern is that as real estate investors, we do fall inside of an exception that is provided by the statute. And I know it was suggested that we could get a license, that if we would just get a real estate license, that in that case we would avoid, you know, this law. But the problem with that is, you know, we buy houses, we sell houses, we do it, you know, personally for ourselves. And if I actually did call to try to figure out, you know, if I get a license, you know, what does that mean for me as far as the way I do my business, which is under, like I said, the exception where as an individual I can buy for myself and I can sell for myself. And but if I go and get a license, then I'm not able to do that anymore, because then I have a conflict of interest. I can't go out and buy a house for myself, because at that point I'm licensed and I need to act like a realtor, which would be then I have an agency relationship, you know, the whole thing. So that doesn't really solve our problem as far as where we fall within the exception. And also at the meeting that we were at before, and it's been suggested that the language is very similar to other language, and so I just did a Google search, nothing fancy, to see what other, you know, language is out there that protects, you know, the public. And one of the ones that has been thrown around several times is the CPA language, and so I pulled up the Oregon statute for accountants, and this is ORS, 7673-170, the disciplinary action grounds. And it says on subsection 8 that if the board has reasonable cause, which right there is stronger language than our Senate bill, which has the language standard is has reason to believe. So the CPE board, if they have reasonable cause to believe that any person has engaged, is engaging, or is about to engage in the violation of the statute or any rule adopted, that the board may issue an order subject to more of their statute directed to a person or any person directly or indirectly controlling the person to cease and desist from the violation or the threatened violation. But then it goes down and refers further in the statute, 673173, the cease and desist order. And here's where their protections come in, and this is really all we're asking for, is to be the same as the CPA board. Because with them, a cease and desist order issued under ORA 673170 shall include the following: a statement of facts constituting the violation, a provision requiring the person named in the order to cease and desist from the violation, the effective date of the order, and a notice to the person named in the order of the right to contested hearing under ORS Chapter 183. Then it goes a little further. Two, an order under this section shall be effective 30 days after the date of the order, unless the person named in the order requests a hearing on the order. And, you know, if we have these protections in this statute, you know, sign us up. We don't have a problem with that, because at that point we have some protection to find out, you know, what have we done? We have the right to a hearing. You know, it's not effective immediately, but under the statute as it reads right now, you know, if the standard is very low, has reason to believe, it does say it's subject to the ORS Chapter 183. And as I read that 183, you know, I have a little bit of a problem, you know, understanding it. So I'm not trying to say that I'm an expert, but it looks like they can do a cease and desist. Then they can record it in the public record at the county records. Then it is given the weight of a judgment that's been issued by a court, which includes the ability to have contempt proceedings. But nowhere in there at this point has my due process rights been observed. And so that's all I'm asking for, is I want to follow the law. I want to do it right. I'm not a bad egg. You know, the group of us down there, we're trying to do things right. And, you know, I'm just asking that, you know, we're allowed to operate under these exceptions, and that I'm asking that we not be shut down. Because, you know, now, you know, we have to prove our innocence. We can be shut down until we prove our innocence, and it can take months to resolve. And during that time, I've, you know, lost my ability to work and to earn money, which is, you know, no small thing, especially in this economy. So I'm just asking that the burden of proof be higher, and that we do have due process before we're shut down. So thank you very much.
Thanks, sir. Go ahead.
Thank you. My name is John Sheldon. Thank you, co-chairs and representatives here, for letting us speak today. I've been a real estate investor, full-time real estate investor and entrepreneur for right at 10 years now. I've been a member of the Northwest Real Estate Investors since February of 2001. I also lead one of the monthly discussion meetings where we talk specifically about ethical real estate investing. And as said by our council, I believe we have about 300 members at this point. 10 years, over 75 properties I've been involved in, and I fall under the exemptions because I'm buying and selling and managing a property for my own business. We respect the spirit of this bill. There are bad eggs, bad apples out there, and there should be ways to get at these people. We've been down here before for other bills speaking, and we have this, you know, the same message. That just what I said, we all need ways to get at what's the bad apples that are out there. Unfortunately, at times the way the bills and this bill is written, there can be unintended consequences that severely affect our ability to earn a living. We have employees, we support contractors, we support real estate realtors and real estate agents in this state. All we're asking for is what Judy has very eloquently stated and brought forth from the other bill regarding the CPAs: an opportunity for a hearing in 30 days. and a higher burden of proof.
Mr. Chair, before you move,
are you finished, sir?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I really appreciate your testimony. I really appreciate your well-thought-out and respectful testimony. That's how we do business in this building. And we have ideas. We throw them up on the wall. We see what sticks. We decide. We work together to try to come to some consensus or some, you know, synthesis on what will help the community. What we don't do in this building, and I appreciate you not doing, is suggesting that somehow we would be involved in some mobster-like behavior. That is not helpful in this room. But I do really appreciate your and I'm sympathetic. I am. I want you to know. I do not want some draconian regulation that could arbitrarily, unilaterally, without the examination of the facts. I really appreciate that. Regulation that could put you, shut you out of business without some kind of due process, without some kind of hearing, without some kind of, you know, let's examine the facts. Let me hear your side of it. But that being said, we have a problem here. And I know you want to solve that problem. I believe you do. Without coming up here and poking me in the eye and offending me, I believe you want to do that. That's what we're trying to do here. We won't be having a work session on this today. This committee is going to examine this and work with these good people over here to see if we can find some common ground and not, if nothing else, just calm the nerves and fears of people that are worried about being put out of business. Because this committee is all about putting people into business and putting people back to work. That's what we do in this room. And we do it in a respectful way, without offending people. That's what we do here. Any questions of these good people, Representative Esquivel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do want to put on the record is if you purchase and sell homes for yourself, you can do that. Right. If you buy a license or purchase a license because it costs you, you have to go to school, you have to earn that right, it puts you at a higher standard. That's all it does. You can purchase property at any given time. You can sell property at any given time. It does not deter one individual from buying and selling property in the state of Oregon. But it does put us at a higher standard and a professional standard. Plus, we have a code of ethics. And I think that code of ethics is something we all should look into because it's very highly revered in our profession. So, therefore, I don't have a problem with anyone becoming a realtor, and trust me, ma'am, it does not deter you from purchasing and selling real estate at any given time. You don't have to belong to a multiple. You don't have to belong to the Oregon Association of Realtors. You can do your own thing, but you are a licensed realtor, and you would at that time have a higher standard.
The question I have on that, if
go ahead,
is that okay? The question I have on that is, I mean, I want to believe you, but I had a situation come up recently where one of my friends, who is a licensed broker, was sending out mailers looking for homes to purchase in her own personal name, you know, outside of the agency. But she got worried that that might be a violation. So I did call our agency board here in Oregon and said, "This is a situation. You know, is this acceptable?" And they said, absolutely not, because she is a licensed realtor, and they referred me to the statute 696.020, where it says that acting on the licensee's own behalf in the sale, exchange, lease, option, or purchase of real estate, or in the offer or negotiations for sale, exchange, lease, option, or purchase of real estate, basically she couldn't do that on her own behalf, because at that point she does have a higher standard and a higher burden, and it's like a conflict of interest because she's, you know, she does have that higher standard. So, you know, I had to call her back up and say, I called the board and they said that, you know, not only do you owe a duty to your principal broker to pay him a fee, that you can't do this.
All right, briefly, Representative.
And that is, it's a breach of trust with their broker. You cannot go outside your broker. But if you have your own license, you can do your own thing if you own your own brokerage. That's what I'm saying.
And I guess the question I have is, you know, we don't all own our own brokerage. And, you know, like if I was starting out getting a license, you know, which, you know, I love education. I'm not opposed to going to school, and I certainly don't want to fly under anybody's radar. But if I go, it's going to take me a while before I would be able to continue with my business, which is you know, I operate under an exemption, you know, that you granted me, which is that a non-licensed individual transferring or acquiring interest in a real estate owned or to be owned by the individual, you know, I can do that. So if I get my understanding is, and, you know, I have limited knowledge, but my understanding is that if I get my real estate license, that then I can't claim this exception, you know, that I'd be working under a different set of rules.
Okay, thank you very much. Chair Kinnamer has a question, then I'm bringing two more people back up for his questions, and then we're going to move on, and then we're...
I do have a
question. Go ahead, Representative. We have three more things to do, and I want to make sure we don't...
I know, Mr. Chair, but my point would be, as I'm researching, it just takes... And thank you for your testimony, and I've heard from you before in the committee last session, so I agree, you don't come here often, but when you do, you have valuable testimony. Thank you. I'm really struggling with this because of the foreclosure market and the fact we have so many folks that are struggling. And I know that this is not meant to you, but some could perceive what some are doing as somewhat predatory. I know that's not your case. You have helped a lot of people out of situations where you're able to purchase their home before it goes into foreclosure, too, and we've had that testimony in the past. So I get that. But what I'm really struggling with here is that you can't do this with cars. You have to be a licensed dealer when you reach a certain amount of cars. You don't get an unlimited, let's just go out and sell as many homes as we can and make as much money as we can. So, not in this state anyway. So, you know, there's laws to protect people in cars. We're talking about huge purchases. And with respect to guerrilla marketing or guerrilla capital, you know, with success comes some scrutiny. And in researching that as well, there's some stories out there that I find somewhat unfortunate as well. So I'm really struggling with this, Mr. Chair, and I'm glad you are too, and I'm glad we're not forcing it to work session. We'll see what we can get. But in the end, I will be landing on what I think best protects people. And I know that you're in that business as well, and I hope we can get there where we can get to agreement.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, please.
Thank you. And I want to say thanks, Representative Matthews. I think we are in a unique time. We've always had people flipping properties, and in my past, I've done that. You buy it cheap, you rehab it, you make money. That's legitimate business. However, I do think, you know, there are some interesting things going on in this recession when I see properties going for a fraction of their value. And frankly, from my perspective, which is pretty biased because I had a bitter experience where I was trying to help a neighbor, you know, it's sort of an insider trading deal. Not specifically, but I mean, it's hard to get in there if you're not in the business. But that aside, Mr. Sheldon, I appreciated your comment, and I guess the thing that intrigued me is I do think there is a serious due process issue here, and I think people are entitled to speedy remedies. And it's essential, particularly if you're flipping houses, because you can't wait 11 months for a hearing to decide whether or not you really own this property and you can proceed. You suggested a 30-day time frame.
I believe Judy mentioned that was in the
well,
in
you
the
had
CPA.
Said 30 days in your testimony, and I guess I was intrigued at that.
Well, can we get a hearing in 30 days?
I don't know. I guess I'm asking about is that a speedy enough time? Because I'm getting a nod from the attorney back here and so forth.
You mentioned 11 months is a long time to wait to flip a house, but we have a business.
Yeah.
It's not just a house.
Absolutely.
And also what we as investors do, it's not just flipping. We buy and hold and remodel, you know, and
insurance, rental,
and
all kinds
like
of
that.
Stuff. I understand. It's
so
complicated.
It's a wide business that
there's most
of us are involved in.
I think you should get one at 15. So with that, I'm moving on.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I would like to call back up, if you would, please, and thank you for sticking around, Mr. Bentley and Ms. Derman, please.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for that courtesy. Mr. Bentley, I guess I wanted to talk to you about people have raised some pretty good concerns here about due process, and that it seems that maybe your process is backwards of the way some are. Well, I'm asking the question. I'm not making the accusation that, you know, maybe there should be a hearing before a desist and the cease and desist order is given, and also a question about the timelines. And I guess I wanted you to speak to both of those, if you would.
Chair Schaffler, Chair Kinnamer, committee members, the process goes a little like this. If somebody files a complaint, mm-hmm. a, somebody doing an unlicensed activity. It comes to a manager within the regulations division. That manager then looks at the complaint and tries to determine whether it is a violation of our regulations. If, in fact, it is a possible violation of our regulations, then it is moved on to an investigation. That investigation is going out to determine the facts of the case, and once that is done, then there is a write-up of the investigation, and that goes to another manager who then determines whether or not there has been a violation and whether or not to take action on that. And actions that can be taken are a letter of education, which is not it isn't a sanction. The sanctions that can be imposed are a suspension of a license if the person is licensed, the revocation of a license if a person is licensed, or we can issue a civil penalty against unlicensed individuals, and there it depends on the number of violations that occur. The first violation has a $100 to $500 range in terms, and after that it goes from $500 to $1,000.
Issue is about what's the timelines for turning this kind of stuff around, and are there safeguards as this bill is progressing?
The investigative process can take anywhere from 30 to 180 days, depending on the complexity of the issue. Once that's done, then we issue we give them an opportunity to have a hearing with us, set down an informal hearing to determine whether we proceed against them in a formal fashion or we can get a stipulated order against the individual if they agree to the facts of the case. They have that opportunity to do that. If they do not want to have a stipulated order, then we issue a preliminary finding against them, and they have the ability to then take that to hearing, and that hearing, depending on how long the Office of Administrative Hearings can take, anywhere from a few weeks to several months to have the hearing geared up.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, let me follow up with Ms. Dermott, please.
You and the Senator, do you see a concern about this due process issue?
This issue came up in the Senate as well.
Thank you. We
added an amendment to the bill to address this concern. However, I do understand that the committee is concerned about it, and I'm not an expert in this, as my colleague sitting next to me is. And the Senator is willing to talk with the stakeholders and try and perhaps clarify the bill if that is necessary.
I would like her to speak to the respectful stakeholders and not the disrespectful ones. I'm going to keep beating that like a drum. Forgive me, Ms. Chair. And one more thing. When you get a complaint, I mean, I could go right down the yellow pages and complain about every realtor in there, and you spelled out a process that could take hundreds of days. I would rather all that research investigation, then you come to a conclusion, you have your ducks in a row, then you go bust the miserable bustard and give him in 15 days, give him a hearing and throw him out on the street if you have to. I got no problem with that. But to drag something out for a long time on a complaint and stop them in the beginning, that I do. I'm sympathetic to that. I really don't think that's how we should do business in Oregon. And I'm hoping the good senator, that's what I'm hearing from these good people right over here, good, respectable, legitimate business people that come here and try and solve problems with us without poking us in the eye, which I greatly appreciate. But that's what I wanted. That's where I see this going. I'm speaking for myself here, not the committee. But with that, any further questions of these good people?
Mr. Chair, I guess I'd like to take you up on your suggestion, and I'd like to ask that you meet with the parties and to see if you can find some reasonable compromise. I'm particularly concerned, and I don't anticipate, from judging from the committee, that there's likely support here unless there's some adjustment to due process. I think the fundamental issue about business is not only due process, but it needs to be quick. And I understand bureaucracy has its problems, and due process also can create complications, but there surely is a way to move this quicker. I'm not so sure about the real estate issue. I think that's a little more complicated one, and I suspect that's probably something more for a task force.
And we've opened up that issue before, and that issue will be opened up 100 times again in the next few years. So I'm not sure how to solve that one. I'm not sure we have a solution to that one, but I think this due process, at least for several of us on this committee, it's clear that's got to be met.
In America, justice delayed is justice denied. I'm going to go to Representative Esquivel, and then we are moving on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that we aren't going to run out here and start cease and desist on everyone on every complaint we get, because that's ludicrous. I think it's kind of like it's the button on the nuclear weapon, that you've had your warning, you've had your opportunity, you did not comply, so therefore we push the button. And I think that's what my interpretation of this is, and I'm seeing a bunch of head nods here. I don't know of any organization in the state of Oregon that randomly just cease and desist, even though there's a lot of agencies that can do this. So I'm not especially concerned about, I think if we want to lay that out specifically, I'd be glad to work with anyone on laying it out specifically, but I think we have some procedures in place anyway that we can administer this.
Great. Thank you very much. With that, we're moving on, and I'm sure we'll all here be hearing from one another in the future. The immediate future. Let's close a public hearing on Senate Bill 4485A and open public hearing on Senate Bill 156A.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 156A passed unanimously out of the Senate Business Transportation and Economic Development Committee and off the Senate floor. What the measure does is it establishes affirmative duties that are owed by a real estate property manager to a property owner and also modifies provisions relating to clients' trust accounts to include licensed real estate property managers and also modifies provisions that are related to record keeping, continuing education, and license issuance and renewal for certain real estate licensees. There's an emergency clause in the measure effective upon passage.
Thank you. Thank you, Teresa. Lori Skillman, Erica Kleiner, and Sean Julians, please.
It's amazing. Full group.
Thank you. Whoever would like to go to first, please. I'm sure we all have our indoor voices on now.
Good morning. Chair Schaffler.
We're going to limit your coffee, Mr. Chair.
We have indoor voices. Schaffler, Chair Kenemer, for the record, my name is Laurie Skillman. I'm a manager with a real estate agency, and I'm testifying here in support of Senate Bill 156, which was amended in the Senate. Erica Kleiner, who is the manager for the administrative services for the agency, will speak specifically to Section 615 of the bill, which was the amendment passed in the Senate. The bill was filed on behalf of the real estate agency. We are responsible, as you know, for licensing real estate brokers, property managers, and escrow agents, and the bill amends provisions of the Oregon real estate law. The bill is a result of a collaborative work group that we put together of real estate licensees, property managers, brokers, the Oregon Association of Realtors, members of the Real Estate Board, and other stakeholders. And we went through and through an administrative rulemaking process and a legislative concept process, came up with the provisions in this bill. There are four primary purposes of the bill. First, it streamlines principal broker licensing for out-of-state brokers licensed in another state who want to come into this state. It simplifies that process for them. It streamlines our regulations through housekeeping provisions that provide greater readability and clarity, and it establishes affirmative duties for property managers that they owe their clients. And these provisions for affirmative duties for property managers exactly parallel the provisions that are currently on the books for brokers and principal brokers. I will just briefly go through a couple of provisions in the bill. There are, right now, the first sort of major component were streamlining regulations for principal broker licensing. If a broker is licensed from out of state and has been and meets the requirements, has been licensed for more than 3 years in another state, and they come into this state, the way that the statutes are currently written is that they have to go through all the processes that we require for brokers. which would be to take a broker's test, to take the broker's examination. And now we have a principal broker's examination, and we felt for them to have to take the broker's examination and the principal broker's examination was a little bit excessive. So that's one of the provisions that is in there. The affirmative duties include things like exercising reasonable care and diligence, to be loyal to their clients, to deal honestly in good faith, to account for funds received, and to disclose conflicts of interest. These are the same kinds of provisions that we have for real estate brokers and principal real estate brokers, those kinds of affirmative duties. And I know Representative Esquivel was talking about higher standards for licensees. That's because those kinds of provisions are in our statutes. I will turn to Erica Kleiner and ask her if she would go through Section 15 of the bill, which was an amendment that went through the Senate.
Sure. Good morning, Co-Chairs Kinnemer and Schaffler. As Ms. Gilman mentioned, I'll specifically address Section 15 of the bill. Just as background, we recently pursued an RFP for examination services.
Well, your name, Ms. Please identify yourself for the record, please.
I'm Erica Kleiner, Oregon Real Estate Agency.
Thank you very much.
And research, as we started to put together the RFP, we looked at Department of Consumer and Business Services Insurance Division, and they had added fingerprinting services to their requirements in their RFP.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, could she get that mic a little closer?
Yes, sir. We're not picking on you. We're just, we got all these rules.
I just can't hear you.
We're in an ordinary mood up here today, as you can tell.
As part of our commitment to regulatory streamlining, we decided to require the vendor to conduct the fingerprinting services at the test sites and also collect fees directly for the exam fee and the fingerprinting fee. Currently, the agency collects the fees, and then essentially the fees pass through our budget. We then pay those same fees to the vendor. So the process takes a little bit more time. In requiring, under the new contract, in requiring the exam vendor to collect the fees directly for the exam and the fingerprinting, it essentially provides a one-stop process for applicants. It dramatically decreases the time it'll take to get the license for the applicant from anywhere from 2 to 3 months down to 2 or 3 days. Currently, ORS 696-270 sets out the maximum fees the agency may charge. And as you can see in the bill deletes the words "and paid to." The Assistant Attorney General that advised us when we did the RFP suggested that we have those words deleted so that the exam vendor could collect the statutorily set fees. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, co-chairs, members of the committee. Sean Jillians representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. Good bill should pass. I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
You, Sean. Any questions of these good people? Representative,
one question. I didn't quite hear the part about the fingerprints.
The fingerprinting services, the exam vendor will be offering the fingerprinting services at the test sites. So the applicant can schedule their examination and also schedule to get their fingerprinting there. And then from the vendor interfaces with the Oregon State Police. And it's a digital fingerprint instead of the current process where the applicant has to receive a 10 card from the agency. And then the applicant has to go get their prints rolled, send in the card to the agency, and then the agency gets the card to Oregon State Police.
Follow up, please.
So it'll be one of those where you put it down, it's instantaneous.
You are correct.
And they come in and lock you up if you're a bad guy.
Are you concerned?
You're America's most wanted.
Is there something you want to say, Representative?
That's a cool deal. I like that.
Representative, please.
I think this is for Ms. Kleiner. So this is going to save money. Could you just put in the record how much money this is going to save? I didn't hear you mention it.
It's expenditure limitation. It really just passes through our budget. So the fee that the applicant pays us, we pay that same fee to the vendor. So we're not saving money, but we were able, we recently had our budget hearing in Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. We phased out about $800,000 off our budget.
Thank you.
Good. Good for you. As long as we're providing the same service, that's really good. Yes, Representative.
Question. Does that mean my real estate fees are going to drop?
Representative
Usher,
no.
All right. Any further questions of these good people? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Would anyone else like to testify on Senate Bill 156A? Members, we're ready to go on this bill. If we're inclined, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 156A and open the session on Senate Bill 156A. Representative?
Yes, I'll move Senate Bill 168.
1568, forgive me.
1568.
Okay.
To the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Chair Kenner moves Senate Bill 156A to the floor with due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, so moved. Would someone like to volunteer to carry this bill? Representative?
Wait.
Is this related to real estate? We've been down this road before, Representative. Some people will complain that a realtor shouldn't carry a real estate bill.
I'm not a realtor.
Thank you.
I do own a house.
Just like Representative Johnson,
I
probably shouldn't
sell
carry
a lot of houses.
Carry a construction contract.
Trying to over
and proud to help my brother. I just want to avoid any complaints.
Representative Coyle will carry this?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much. With that, I'm going to work session Senate Bill 156A and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 173A.
Mr. Chair, Committee Member, Senate Bill 173A limits the amount recoverable by either a medical service provider or a health insurance provider for medical service provided in workers' compensation claims resolved by a settlement to the full medical fee schedule amount. The measure also allows payment to a medical service provider directly from the settlement proceeds. The bill passed unanimously out of the Senate Business Transportation and Economic Development Committee and off the Senate floor. This measure was unanimously approved by the Management Labor Advisory Committee.
Thank you, Teresa. Chris Frost, please. I only have Ms. Frost on here today. Come on up, please. If anybody else wants to testify, come on up. All right, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Chris Frost from Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. And thanks, Co-Chair Schaffler and Co-Chair Kennemer and members of the committee. SB 173-A unanimously passed out of the Management Labor Advisory Committee with a due pass recommendation. And OTLA worked with OMA, DCBS, SAFE, and the self-insured stakeholders to address any concerns throughout the MLAC process. So this bill only pertains to injured workers who settled their workers' compensation claims out of the system called a disputed claim settlement, and only those who choose to have enough money in the settlement and choose to pay the full amount of their medical bills out of the settlement. Currently, when an injured worker settles a disputed claim, the medical providers who charge more than the workers' comp medical fee schedule can seek to get the difference between what they charge and what they would get if the claim had been accepted. So oftentimes, injured workers who thought they had settled their claim find that they still have outstanding bills. So under SB 173-A, if an injured worker chooses to pay 100% of that fee-scheduled amount to the provider out of the settlement, the bill would be considered to be paid in full, and the medical provider would no longer be able to collect any remaining balances from the worker. So that's the gist of the bill.
Thank you. Any questions?
Sure. If I could comment, I want to thank you for working with all of the groups. That's something that often is not the case. And it was quite unusual to find, as far as I can tell, everybody is happy.
Yeah, it's a very rare and beautiful thing, yes.
Man, if you're that good,
I thought it was worth mentioning.
If you're that good at it, we got a whole lot of work for you.
Yeah, are you ready for some pro bono work?
Any questions of Ms. Frost? All right, thank you very much. Colleagues, Teresa, we're ready to go on this bill if everyone's inclined. I'm going to close public hearing on Senate Bill 173A, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 173A. Representative?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 173A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Chair Kennedy moves Senate Bill 173A floor, due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, so moved.
Mr. Chair, you think it's appropriate to put this on the consent agenda?
I love the consent.
I'm inclined to do that. Given some of the names on there, I'm inclined not to. As I mentioned in my comments earlier, it's unusual. But it's been unanimous out of the Senate.
Yes.
Yeah. It's unanimous out of this committee. I just don't see the controversy. Let's put it on the consent agenda. Is that
absolutely? Sounds like a good idea to me.
Okay with that?
Yeah. Right.
Thank you very much.
I'll close the work session. I'm an open work session, Senate Bill 782.
Mr. Chair, members, we heard Senate Bill 782 on April 25th. What the measure does is that it requires counties to notify the Employment Department with the name, date of birth, and Social Security number of defendants upon incarceration. During the public hearing, there was concerns raised about the applicability of the measure's provisions to work release centers and those that are participating in a work release program. I was directed by the committee to talk to legislative counsel. Long story short, under current statute ORS 144480, those that are participating in an inmate work program are not qualified to receive unemployment insurance benefits. So the individual that put in their opposition has withdrawn their opposition to the measure.
Thank you. It's important we get benefits to those who deserve it and deny any extra anything to those who don't. I would like to once again thank our partners in local government for being so diligent and being so helpful to this committee, as always. It's always a pleasure. And I'm going to
buy you a large container of butter. Yes.
I'm going to. I would entertain a motion.
Butters everyone up.
Okay.
Unless you call
it. Teresa, everything is in order and no amendment.
There's no amendment.
Sure. Mob.
Yeah, I move Senate Bill 782 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Chair Kennedy moves Senate Bill 782 for due pass recommendations. Any discussion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, so moved. I'm one of the sponsors. I think I'll carry this bill without objection. So I can praise our partners in local government once again.
You know, Mr. Chair,
I don't think I need butter. I think I might need a shovel.
Mr. Chair, I guess you can carry this. It did pass out of the Senate unanimously. This could be a consent agenda.
I would go for the consent calendar. Is that good with the committee?
Me, Mr. Chair.
Then that's so moved. All right, with that, I'm going to work Senate Bill 782. And anything?
Mr. Chair, did you want to do a rule suspension?
Oh, forgive me. I want to suspend the rules. I move that, I will entertain a motion to suspend the rules on Senate Bill 704A for the purpose of allowing Representative Hoyle to vote.
Thank you. So moved.
Now, Representative Hoyle. Oh, forgive me. Is there any discussion on the motion? 4-3. Is there any objection to the motion to suspend the rules to allow a good representative to vote? Seeing none, so moved. Representative, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
And
thank you.
Anything else for the good of the order?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make sure for those in the audience who didn't see this, we are not meeting on Friday.
Praise the Lord.
Yeah.
The audience, too. Or those out in internet and TV.
All right. If nothing else,
thank you. Butter up the mafia.